Hello, everybody. We're beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 28. And we have reached page 58 in the book. And what? Only another 600 pages to go. All right. So we have come to the point where we are talking about the Great Wheel and spiritual unfoldment. Just make sure that all is showing well. Yes, it is. From page 58 to 71. Obviously, we won't cover all that today. Okay. And DK tells us, before I give you the remaining part of the chart, which deals with the constellations as conductors of cosmic energies, obviously cosmic energies which lie even beyond the constellations and are even greater in their scope, or as transmitters of their own energy. Let's look at that carefully, conductors and transmitters. This is a special way of using those words, and the word conductors seems to suggest that the energy originates from an outside source, probably a greater source, probably from the super constellations, or from even greater constellations. And transmitters suggest that the energy is pouring forth from the source itself. There's also a word emitter. Transmitter can be used as a word that suggests it comes from another source and passes through. Emitting can be used to indicate that it's coming from its own nature. And let's see. Okay. Let's put that word in. Emitting. I would like to remark that much that I shall say will be based upon the following. Okay. Based upon. The wheel of life and the path of man, the human being, as he passes through the signs according to the mode recognized by Orthodox astrology. Now, that means that he will be responding to the Orthodox rulers, and there will be a limit in his spiritual response. Okay. He, as well as the planets, well, Orthodox astrology doesn't deal with this at all, but DK is giving the real reason behind it, behind that limited response to the full potential of the signs, the constellations. Because when you cannot respond to the esoteric ruler or the hierarchical ruler in relation to a constellation or sign, you definitely have a limited response range compared to the potentials possible. He, as well as the planets, apparently retrogrades through the signs and appears to pass through the signs Aries to Taurus. You can wonder from what perspective Master DK is viewing this. Can he see this? Is it actually happening? He says, but this is all part of the great illusion. So, how does this apparency appear? Now, if we were able to track the successive incarnations of an individual, would we see a pattern that demonstrates that he is somehow passing in a retrograde manner? But of course, we are always free to go around the wheel the other way in the counterclockwise manner and say that whatever sign we're dealing with, he has transited a number of signs and landed in this particular sign. I don't think we're talking about a sequential point-by-point retrogression or progression. In other words, we're not talking about being born in Taurus, if you were born previously in Aries, or we're not talking about, let's say, dying in Taurus, if you were born in Aries, and therefore being born in Taurus, and then in the next life, dying in Gemini, and therefore being born with the Sun in Gemini, and the same for the reverse mode. I don't think we are talking about that. There's something symbolical going on here, and as I've tried to suggest, it has to do with how we respond to the signs, whether as a personality, in which case we would be appearing to retrograde through the signs, or as a spiritual type or soul, in which we would be appearing to progress through the signs. Anyway, this has yet to be clarified, what exactly what DK means. The wheel of life and the path of man, the divine or spiritual soul. Man is considered, in this case, the divine or spiritual soul. And notice that we were discussing this in the last webinar. Was there a difference between divine soul and spiritual soul? And we decided that there might be a difference. And the divine soul could relate to the awareness of the monad. And the spiritual soul to the awareness of the spiritual triad, or perhaps to the soul on its own plane. But in this particular case, DK seems to put them together. Man, the divine or spiritual soul, as if the spiritual soul is the divine soul, as he passes through the signs of the zodiac according to the mode studied by the esoteric astrologer. Well, even the exoteric astrologer considers that astrology is progressive, i.e., proceeding counterclockwise, and the charts in general, when we direct planets, we always direct them in a counterclockwise manner, although there are some astrologers who like to play the wheel in both directions, using converse directions and converse progressions, but usually we go in a counterclockwise manner. In other words, no exoteric astrologer I know has conceived of man regressing backwards through the signs. So this has to be a kind of a symbolic thought. And whether it is an actuality from any type of perspective, we do not know. Anyway, the esoteric astrologer views man as progressing counterclockwise, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc., until Pisces is reached. This is the path of reality, and the other is the path of illusion. Okay, now we have to see here whether for some reason there has been an interruption in the recording. I hope not. I don't dare go back and try to find that. Hopefully it will be okay. So the wheel of life and the path of man, the divine or spiritual soul, as he passes through the signs of the zodiac according to the mode studied by the esoteric astrologer, which is counterclockwise. And this means that the man is responding, you know, very simply to the higher potentials of the sign. In other words, let's just say progression counterclockwise means that man is responding to the higher dimensions of the sign or constellation. This is the path of reality, as the other is the path of illusion, always when the consciousness is responding from the personal perspective, the illusion of ahamkara is involved. For some reason, I'm getting the sign about the experiencing of a degraded audio. I hope that is not the case. And I'll just lower this a little bit and see if it can help. This carries the disciple, that is the path of reality, carries the disciple around the path from commencement in Aries to consummation in Pisces. By consummation, we generally mean the taking of the fourth degree, or even the fifth. The present method is based upon the temporary truth. The present method, you know, he's suggesting that ordinary astrologers are considering a retrogressive method. Well, that particular concept is not in their mind, but their method of interpretation is equivalent to the one that DK says is associated with a retrogression through the science. The present method is based upon the temporary truth that ordinary man is subject to the illusory nature of manifestation, and as he thinks, so is he. He believes in the reality of the kaleidoscopics in the universal kaleidoscope. In other words, these various aggregations or forms or comings together within a field of energy are seen to him as real. How does DK describe the usual forms with which we deal? He calls them congestions. So aggregations which are congestions, man believes in their reality. And as he thinks, so is he. According to his conception, so he lives. And it is a temporary truth. It's temporary because it lasts only so long as man does not begin to aspire and find himself as an inwardly spiritual being who is distinct from his lower nature. In other words, that sense of spiritual duality has not yet entered. Once it does, this temporary truth is set aside, and man begins to progress in a different way. When, however, he becomes Heracles, the sun god, or solar angel, very interesting here, relating Heracles as a sun god to the solar angel. In other words, when he begins to respond to causal consciousness, or even can begin to enter causal consciousness, he begins to reverse the process, again only apparently, it's not a reality, and a definite reorientation takes place. Interesting about Leo in relation to the solar angel. That which takes place on the higher mental plane, the sunflower, the 12-petaled lotus that is created, is indeed in its radiance related to the sign Leo. And all the gifts and values and potencies stored in the causal body are very much ruled by the fifth house of the horoscope considered spiritually. So Heracles is in his Leo aspect here as a sun god or a solar angel, which is the man identifying with that which the solar angel has created on the higher mental plane. So man becomes kind of in that respect, man becomes a minor solar angel in a way. A reorientation takes place. The teachers on the inner side, therefore, study the horoscope only in its relation to the following three entities. And these are, number one, the horoscope of the planet itself as the expression of the life of the planetary logos. When DK uses the word planet, we don't know whether he means the dense planet per se, or the etheric physical planet, or whether he is including a number of the vehicles of the planet, including perhaps its astral body, mental body, and other vehicles. So is it a very concrete term to be applied only physically? In any case, we are studying a globe, a planetary globe, and the question remains, how many levels of subtlety does a globe have? I've always thought that it has quite a number of levels of subtlety, just the way the human body is accompanied by many levels of subtlety. And I've always thought that the other globes, let us say six others, are not the subtle vehicles of, let us say, our own Earth globe. They are their own globe and have their own still subtler vehicles than the outermost vehicle through which they express. So the masters, or the great ones, the teachers, they study the horoscope of the planet itself as the expression of the life of the planetary logos. There's only one expression, because the planetary logos expresses through other globes, through other chains, and through the globes of those chains. It is an expression of the planetary logos himself. This involves the studying of the horoscope of the spirit of the planet, and that is the planetary logos considered in his spiritual nature. That's not the same thing as the planetary entity, which is the sum total of the dense physical vehicle of the planet and the lives that animate that vehicle. So this involves the studying of the horoscope of the spirit of the planet, as well as of the informing life and their joint relationship and interplay. Now, okay, what I've just said is related to the way DK sometimes talks about the spirit of the planet, but now he's going to define it in a different way, closer to that of the planetary entity. So the spirit of the planet and the spirit of the Earth are equivalent, and he's going to define the spirit of the Earth, or the spirit of the planet, in a relatively low manner. So let's see here. Yeah. Okay. In a relatively low manner. Now, I have to, in a way, take back a little bit of what I said. I've searched this out. The spirit of the planet is pretty well consistently defined as the personality nature of the planet or the planetary entity. But notice here something very close to the term spirit of the planet, the planetary spirit. See, spirit of the planet, planetary spirit, is another term for the logos of the planet. So spirit of the planet and planetary spirit are different. And I think this is the first time I've seen that distinction. The cyclic influence of the planetary spirit is point of involution. Now, in this particular case, he seems to call the planetary spirit an involutionary spirit. Maybe it all depends on whether the term spirit is capitalized or not. The main reason that it profits us not to study these energies too closely is because the planetary spirit, or logos, and the planetary entity are two forms in active manifestation. So the planetary spirit, but he does capitalize that, is a being who long ago passed through the state of consciousness, which we call the human state, and left it far behind. So, okay, that is a correction. When he says the spirit of the planet, he does mean, in this case, a planetary entity. But when he says planetary spirit, he means the logos of the planet. That's a clarification. Okay, so this involves we were studying the horoscope of the planet itself as the expression of the life of the planetary logos, and this involves studying the planetary entity as well as the informing life. And the informing life, in this case, would be the planetary spirit. We have to watch our terminology very carefully. Even once, the term planetary spirit, as I just showed you, means the involutionary entity. So it's easy to get confused. Anyway, there is a joint relationship and interplay between the informing life, which is the logos of the planet, and the the spirit of the planet. The spirit of the earth is to the planetary logos of the earth, for instance, what the personality or form nature is to the soul of man, or even perhaps the monad of man. The two horoscopes by the teachers are superimposed, and the planetary pattern then emerges. So the teachers, the teachers are involved in planetary astrology. Okay. All right, then they also study the horoscope of the human family, or of the fourth kingdom. Now, this is not the fourth creative hierarchy, necessarily. The kingdom is a specialized expression of the fourth creative hierarchy. This is also the kingdom of souls, which is an expression of the fourth creative hierarchy, but it is the fifth kingdom. And then there's the kingdom of planetary lives, some of whom are still within the fourth creative hierarchy, such as the Chohans, in a sense. And it is a question as to whether the lower forms of life, the lower kingdoms, are also special cases in the expression of the fourth creative hierarchy. The lower kingdoms, that is. They study the horoscope of the human family, or the fourth kingdom in nature, regarding it as an entity, which it essentially is. It is one being, it is one consciousness, it is one multiplex form, one multiple form, which it essentially is. Okay. This is, in reality, the study of two horoscopes, as in the case above. The horoscope of the kingdom of souls, or the divine sons of God upon the mental plane, so studying in a way the egoic nature of man on the higher mental plane, and the study of the entity which is the coherent life of the form side in nature. Can we call this, in a way, humanity's spirit versus the spirit of humanity? Well, I don't think we would use terms like spirit of humanity, because it suggests something too high. But there is an entity which is the coherent life of the form side of the fourth kingdom, and it is that particular entity which at the moment and during the great wars of the last century appears to be in rebellion against the directives coming from the kingdom of souls, from the egoic nature of humanity, the egoic lotus of humanity, you might almost say, combined of all the egoic lotuses of all the human beings who are. And this is done again by superimposing two charts, and then we can see the contrary indications or the harmonious indications. I'm sure there are times when it is easier for the soul nature of humanity to get through to its to that entity which is its personality nature. And of course, we do not yet for humanity have an integrated personality. The great entity humanity is not yet an integrated personality. There's still a great deal of internecine warfare going on between the different vehicles within the human entity. Let's just say there's quite a battle on between the mind of humanity and the desire nature of humanity, especially the mind as it is influenced by humanity's soul nature, and the desire nature as it is influenced by the pull of humanity's instincts. Anyway, this again is done by superimposing the two charts. These charts are drawn on a large scale. I guess they'd have to be, because so much is going on, and on a transparent material of which humanity knows nothing. DK often hints at the various kinds of materials which are known to the masters, and there was one material on which some sacred writing was given, and it is sort of the allotrope of silver. Again, humanity knows nothing of this particular material. Upon these charts are noted the pattern which emerges when soul and personality are brought together, and we have to do exactly the same with our horoscopes. We have a horoscope built up around the rising sign, which indicates soul direction. And we have a horoscope perhaps built up around the sun sign, which indicates the tendencies of that entity which we call the personality. And the moon would have to be involved in that as well. So upon these charts are noted the pattern which emerges when soul and personality are brought together, the present conditions, possible developments and relationships, and the immediate future objective with clarity. So the teachers see whither humanity is tending. What are the possibilities? What may be the obstacles? What may be the potentials of the human race at any particular time? And they try to contribute to the balancing of conditions so that soul potentials can be realized. I'm sure this is going on very strongly at this moment of great stress within the human family. Okay, the teachers, therefore, they study the horoscope of the planet, they study the horoscope of humanity, and they also study the horoscope of disciples, horoscopes of disciples. The masters do not study the charts of ordinary, undeveloped man. This would be a violation of the law of economy, probably. It would be a waste of time. There's so much that ordinary, undeveloped man has to work out and probably can work out given the guidelines that he has and the type of supervision that is there for him. There is no profit in doing so. So this involves, again, the study of two horoscopes of the disciple under inspection. That sort of fifth ray scorpionic plutonic term, inspection. One, the horoscope of the soul, or at least of what the soul can accomplish in a particular life, and the other of the personality. I don't really think we have at the moment what can be called the horoscope of the soul, but we might have a pattern through which the soul can influence the personality, a pattern within the personality horoscope through which the soul can influence and superimpose its own nature upon the personality. And this will involve certainly the rising sign and its ruler. So again, the process of superimposition is utilized. And we've, in some of our astrology classes, we have attempted to do this. And also, in the Solar Fire program, there are some utilities which allow you to superimpose a horoscope built up around the rising sign over the horoscope built up around the sun sign. And it's always a question of hierarchical status of a particular energy. Given two energies, which energy should be allowed to dominate or helped to dominate in some way? Here we have to use our intelligence and our will to emphasize or de-emphasize different related energies. So again, the process of superimposition is utilized in one horoscope, and this is a very important sentence here. In one horoscope, the new orientation and the embryonic reorganized inner life will be studied. Now, this is a big question, you see. Are we strictly dealing with the personality horoscope? We can look for patterns in the personality horoscope which are soul sensitive, we might say. You know, let's say the rising sign, its esoteric ruler, and the various aspects from esoteric rulers and sacred planets to that esoteric ruler. That's one way of doing it. But here, this seems to call for what is called an examination of the conception chart, which is a Uranian chart. Embryonic inner life. That phrase seems to relate to the Uranian conception chart, whether that occurs at the exact moment of conception or at a moment which is tied by certain formulas to the moment of birth, that still has to be worked out. There's so much in this science which has to be examined. But, you know, the new orientation, that's so Uranian, if you really think about it, you know. That is Uranian, and there is a Uranian chart, it is the conception chart, and there are a number of different ways to create this conception chart. Probably I can't get into the details, but again, in the Solar Fire program, you are given the opportunity to create the conception chart, but you have to choose among perhaps six to eight possible conception charts, and that is a tedious process. It's a question of how these charts seem to work out in the present personality life when you progress and direct the charts. And if you happen to know when you were conceived, and whether it was a normal birth, a normal gestation period of 9 months, or shorter or longer, that is very useful, I would think. So there's a whole branch of astrology here which deals, I think, with the superimposition of the conception chart, the Uranian chart, over the birth chart, which is the Saturnian chart. You know, Saturn always has to do with concretion, and the fact of physical birth onto the dense physical plane is a very Saturnian matter. So in one horoscope, the new orientation, Uranian, and the embryonic reorganized inner life, which seems to suggest that at the time that the embryo, there's a hint here, at the time that the embryo starts to grow, the inner life is reorganized and reflected in a chart which can be drawn for that time of the beginning of the embryo, will be noted and studied. And in the other chart, the outer life and its conformity or nonconformity. Now, those are hinting words, because Saturnian words, conformity and nonconformity, have to do with Saturnian conditions. Actually, in a way, conformity is Saturnian, and nonconformity, in a way, is Uranian. But we're dealing with outer conditions and whether they conform to the inner pattern. So I wonder how many of us have searched out an acceptable conception chart, one that speaks to us, one that we have chosen out of the many possibilities, and seen whether, when we think of our inner nature, that inner nature conforms to the conception chart. When we seek to build our inner self and express it in the outer world, is this inner self congruent with what the conception chart indicates, or do we simply go to our birth chart and try to find an indication about our inner self there? There are so many hints and possibilities in this newer type of astrology, but the experimentation must take place, and I do think it will take hundreds of years, much accurate psychical research, much ability to see previous lives and the soul development which occurred in previous lives, and matching of that type of inner vision with the different horoscopic possibilities taken at different times, such as the time of conception, the time when the beating of the heart begins. That's a Neptunian chart. A lot of this research was done by Charles Jayne with his ABC charts, looking at this important triangle of conception, animation. That's the C is conception, animation, and B is birth. So C-A-B. We have to make sure we have these three charts as accurately as possible, and then compare their indications to the manner in which our inner spiritual life is unfolding. Okay, let's see here. The new orientation and the embryonic reorganized inner life will be noticed and studied. And in the other chart, the outer life, you know, Saturn representing the rind of life, and its conformity or nonconformity to the inner conditions will be the subject of attention. Now, obviously, let's just say, in our outer living, we all want to conform to the inner conditions. That would make our life a spiritual success. Suppose there was a deep inner kind of pattern, which was fundamentally what the soul had in mind for expression during a particular incarnation. We would want to make sure that the outer conditions, the outer tendencies of our life, our actions, our thoughts, and so much, so forth, conform to that deep inner pattern. Now, so what I'm saying here is that there's a way to look for the inner and outer in two separate charts, one being a conception chart, the other being a birth chart, and that is difficult to do because you never know with certainty whether you have the exactly correct conception chart and whether it should be rectified in some manner, or you look to the personality horoscope and you try to find, as it were, two charts within the personality horoscope, two different orientations, one built up upon the rising sign and the other built up upon the sun sign, and you look for a superimposition not of two charts, but a superimposition of two orientations in the same chart. And this can also be done, I think, using the Solar Fire program. Thus the life pattern will emerge. Possibilities will be indicated. Problems will disappear, and the immediate next step will clearly show forth. Well, we certainly want that desirable result. The life pattern, by that we mean the soul pattern, the pattern that the soul seeks to see achieved in a particular incarnation. After all, the second ray correlating with the soul, is called the ray of the divine pattern. Potentials are there. That which blocks the potentials will be seen, and then the intelligence and the willpower can be brought to bear on that which is indicated. And we can do our best then willfully to decrease the obstacles and willfully to increase the potentials, and we can see what the next step will be. Because always, when it comes to the question of human growth, spiritual growth, particularly, we are interested in two things, and that is the constitution of man and the next step ahead. Those are the two things the Tibetan tells us that we need to know if we are going to be able to progress spiritually. Okay. So that is a very, very potent paragraph, and from the seed of that paragraph, so much research can be undertaken. I mean, there may come a time when in this series of discussions or teachings, I may try to show what a superimposed chart could look like. I know everyone would be interested in that, and the different methods of superimposition. Yes, we could do that, as well as, of course, we could interpret various horoscopes from the spiritual principles. We could also take a good look at physiognomy, because in this type of webinar format, we do have all the visuals easily conveyed. And so we want to see how astrology really pervades every aspect of our life. And we want to see the specifics of it. But I think we have to begin to a degree with the generalities. And that's what we're doing in this first 100 or so pages. It thus becomes apparent again to what an extent the principle of duality enters into everything. You know, when we're dealing with the mutable cross or the common cross, we are definitely in the realm of duality. We have not found ourselves as a unitive soul yet. DK is telling us that we have a contrast in our nature, especially, he's emphasizing here, between soul and personality. And he's trying to show us, in the case of the planetary logos, in the case of the entity humanity, in the case of the disciple man, how his dual nature stands out, and how there are techniques in astrology to get an idea of this, of the indications of each aspect of the duality, and try to bring the lower member of the duality into conformity and subjugation to the higher aspect of the duality. In other words, our personality chart, or whatever we conceive that to be, should submit itself or be submitted to the soul chart, which should be the dominant. It is a shifting dualism. Well, sometimes the soul is in control and sometimes the personality. It is a shifting dualism according to where the emphasis may be placed. But this dualism is present until the last and final initiation. Present in the later... last and final initiation. What does he mean by that? Does he mean the fourth initiation? Because there's a very great dualism there, which is resolved by the harmonizing Buddhic energy and by the heart center, which is the chakra involved in this fourth initiation. Or does he take us even farther up to the seventh initiation, which resolves the duality of love and wisdom under Gemini, and which is officiated over by the planetary logos himself? Maybe he'll tell us here. But this dualism is present until the last and final initiation, present in the later stages of the evolutionary process. Definitely, because we are acutely aware of soul-personality dualism, and even of spirit, in a dual relationship with soul-infused personality. In the adjustment of form relations, but not present in the consciousness of the disciple of advanced degree, meaning that the disciple of advanced degree has entered a state of consciousness in which subject and object are seen to be united. Form is dual in many respects, and there are contests and conflicts between the different principles of man, but somehow the consciousness of the advanced disciple sees this all in a unity. From the time the disciple is taking the third degree, he is able to realize that he is a unity, and he is able to make revelation, we are told in the rays and initiations. He's able to make revelation of the monad, which is the one. He's able to make revelation of the one, regardless of the conflicting dualities which are apparently found within his nature. So the third degree is the important degree for the achieving a unified consciousness, which some have jumped ahead and called cosmic consciousness. DK tells us it's nothing of that nature at all, but we certainly have, with the completion of the triangle in the head created a unitive way of viewing the world, such that the whole may be seen as one. So this is a major point to be grasped. Duality persists, but in the consciousness of the advanced disciple, duality is overcome. Okay. D.K. tells us that a third point must here be made, following upon the two earlier emphasized. A great part of our study will be occupied with the relation of the six constellations in the upper half of the zodiacal wheel to the six in the lower half. Somehow, he seems to be suggesting that the constellations from Libra to Pisces are perhaps in a more elevated position than those from Aries through Virgo. That is possible. We shall consider the energy which is a human being. Note that phrasing. See how careful he is with the words there? That's why I oftentimes try to say identification as instead of identification with. Okay, we shall consider the energy which is a human being, note that phrasing, as it travels clockwise from Aries to Taurus, and then, reversing the process, travels from Aries to Pisces. It's a reorientation of desire. It's a change of consciousness. It's a change of objective. Desire always has its objective, but when you're traveling from Aries to Taurus via Pisces, your objective is in the material world. When you're traveling from Aries through Taurus to Pisces, your objective is eventually in the spiritual world, and you do not want to be a consciousness held by dense form, as if that dense form were a reality. You do not want to have a consciousness preoccupied with dense form. We will consider the dualities provided by one of these constellations and its opposite. Okay, he's telling the procedure in the book. We will study, therefore, the great qualities provided by the constellation and its opposite sign, and we will take up the matter in the matter in the following manner. Remember that when we're dealing with a sun sign, the sign which is opposite is of very great importance, because you're looking at a kind of an antikorana, where the sun sign represents the lower anchor within the personality of the antikorana, and the point opposite the sun sign represents the higher aspect of the antikorana, ending in spirit or monad itself, which not all can yet respond to. Probably very few can respond to it, but it's good to know the general theory. So he says we will take up these points in the following manner. Okay. Yeah, we're going to consider the dualities, the constellation and its opposite. We'll take up the points in the following manner. We will work from the standpoint of commencement in Aries, always the sign of beginnings, until the man, through many turnings of the wheel of life, and that means, I suppose, passing through many cycles, reaches the point of reversal or reorientation. So, in this case, the man has been retrograding. Man has been retrograding through the signs, passing backwards, although the exact method of that retrogradation is not given. The man progresses from the point where, in Cancer, he forms part of the mass with mass consciousness. All are thinking and feeling in a standardized way, and there's no thoughtful individual approach. Mass consciousness, inchoate and unfocused, not a well-formed consciousness, not a focused consciousness, and with no recognition of objective except the satisfaction of instinctual desire, until In Scorpio, he becomes the triumphant disciple, having found himself in Leo. Well, before you can become, you see the order here, before you can become the triumphant disciple, you must have a strong sense of your own personal identity. You have to have a degree of self-confidence. You have to know your qualities, your traits. You have to be able to get control over your abilities so that you can apply them in the great battles of Scorpio. Now we are, the man progresses from the point. See, in Cancer, he's very much on the retrograding wheel, as Cancer is here described. From the point where in Cancer he forms a part of the mass, that's certainly not part of the reversed wheel, he has no real sense of his center and of himself as a distinct identity in control of his faculties. But this he gains in Leo. And in Scorpio, he is able to demonstrate as a triumphant disciple. But you can ask yourself, as things are described here, are we really talking about the retrograde wheel, the clockwise wheel? Because in Cancer, the way it's described here, yes, it's on the retrograde wheel. But finding oneself in Leo is probably to be considered on the reversed wheel. And certainly the triumph in Scorpio is that which occurs upon the reversed wheel. Then comes the crisis of reorientation, which may take a long time and constitute an interlude of many lives of struggle. But nevertheless, it does seem as if DK is talking about finding oneself and becoming a triumphant disciple as if it were on the ordinary retrograde wheel. That doesn't make entire sense to me if I'm understanding it. I hope I'm not misunderstanding it. The question of finding oneself can be done at different levels. So in one way, you can find yourself on the ordinary wheel, and there's another way of finding yourself as something more than an ego, a lower ego, by being on the reverse wheel. But in any case, to me it looks like becoming the triumphant disciple in Scorpio is a task for the reversed wheel. But anyhow, DK talks about these three experiences in Cancer, Leo, and Scorpio as if they were on the ordinary wheel. And then he says there comes the crisis of reorientation. This is always involving the sign Libra. Sometimes the sign Scorpio involves generally the planet Uranus, which creates a fundamental change of values and reversal. And it says it may take a long time, many lives of struggle, where you feel the very strong tendencies pulling you towards personality, life, and demonstration and expression, and yet you feel the urge towards something higher, less personal, more expansive, more spiritual, more unitive, an orientation towards a higher part of yourself or towards a higher power. And I suppose there are a number of people who are passing through this troubled period. Probably the fourth ray is a ray which can be found powerfully at such a time to represent the counterpulls that one experiences, struggle. The fourth ray, is the ray of struggle, and Scorpio is the paramount fourth ray sign. Okay, so we're going to take up these points, the sign in which a man is born and its opposite. In terms of the progress on the wheel and the reversal, then once the reversal has taken place, man is trying to tread the probationary path, so we're going to take up the study from the standpoint of the man upon the probationary path, which most people that I know who think about the matter are convinced that it starts before the first initiation. I think so. Seeking the light, struggling through the signs, as the old commentary expresses it when considering this point. So on the probationary wheel, we have reversed our direction, which means again that we respond to the potentials of the sign in a higher way. He turns from right to left, and then again from left to right. He revolves in giddy fashion upon the axis of desire, as if he's not quite sure of his purpose. He knows not where to go or what to do. The sky turns black, meaning that he no longer sees the objectives that he once saw. So he's on the mutable cross, the cross of many changes, and here again, it does, you know, is he really on the reversed wheel at this point? DK seems to be saying that he is, that the probationer is turning right to left, left to right, and is trying to straighten out his orientation until Sagittarius can finally direct him towards the goal. He revolves in giddy fashion upon the axis of desire. This is the early part of the path of probation. He knows he wants something higher, but he knows not where to go or what to do. He does not see the objective. At this point, the sign Gemini begins potently to play its part in the life of disciples, with Sagittarius gradually piercing the heart with his arrows. Some of the great saints and sages have died from the arrow, from being shot by the arrow, a symbolic death. And then upon the flight of the arrow, the man reaches Capricorn. So we are definitely on the wheel of on the counterclockwise wheel. We're on the wheel of consciousness at this form, even though on the early stages of the wheel of consciousness there is that revolving in a giddy fashion. Gemini is going to stimulate the intuition. It's going to make very clear now a better sense of direction, because it will define what is the higher of the pairs of opposites, and how it is contrasted. That's the great ability in Gemini, to contrast, how it is contrasted with the lower of the pairs of opposites. Sagittarius will sensitize the heart by piercing it, and the man will no longer be the victim of outgoing desire, but he will definitely desire that which the wounded heart, the sensitive heart, reveals. And then upon the arrow of intuition, he will fly towards the possibility of initiation in Capricorn, from which the crisis of initiation or renunciation, taking the fourth degree, becomes possible in these last three signs. Aquarius is related to the fourth degree, Pisces certainly is, and Capricorn, we are told, is a sign which applies to all five of the first five initiations, initiation 1 through 5. Okay. Well, we have reached that point. So we have Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 28. And how far have we gone? Up to page 58? Something like that. Farther than that. We've gone up to page, it looks like page 61. All right. So we end at 61, and I think we began at 58. I'll straighten that out later. For now, we will together do the great invocation. And I will take this up in the next Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 29. Okay, so the great invocation now. Point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. We're into some very interesting things now, and we, you know, it would be good to be able to back this up with concrete examples, which I think we can do, but let us try to get an overview of the book and then enter into the more concrete examples and try thereby to at least fulfill the Leo stage of esoteric astrology and find ourselves as we are, not as we seem to be, but as we are. Okay, so we'll take up esoteric astrology adventure number 29 shortly. See you then.